Hey guys, you're listening to the most captivating podcast in iTunes. That's right, the Elite Man Podcast, where we turn average men into elite men every day. We interview the very best experts from the lifestyle, health, fitness, social, and even entrepreneurial worlds. And with their help, we give you some of the best advice on the planet. Subscribe now if you haven't already and enjoy the show. And oh yeah, if you really enjoy it, leave us a review. On today's episode, episode number 120, entitled, How to Beat Cancer Naturally, I chat with Ty Bollinger. Ty is a health and freedom advocate, a world-renowned cancer expert, and the author of the New York Times best-selling book, The Truth About Cancer, which is a phenomenal book, and I can't recommend it highly enough. It's also in the show notes for anyone who's interested in picking it up. Ty and I discuss in this episode the family tragedy that led him down the path to finding natural cancer treatments, the most effective treatments currently available, and the ways of preventing cancer out there right now. Also, what you can do today if a loved one is diagnosed with cancer. Ty shares with us his journey of traveling all around the world and his hundreds of interviews with the world's leading cancer doctors and what they're doing right now to stop cancer from killing so many people. If you're interested at all about cancer, if a family member has cancer, or if you're wondering what you can do right now if you or a loved one is diagnosed with cancer, check this episode out now. It is phenomenal. Hey gentlemen, have you joined the best Facebook group on the planet yet? Man, I talk about this group all the time, but for good reason. The Elite Man Mastermind group on Facebook is the hands down one collection of like-minded men you have to be a part of. I'm talking about world-class performers here. Authors, podcasters, life coaches, dating coaches, relationship experts, health and fitness experts, nutritionists, doctors. There's so many awesome professionals in this group willing to lend you a hand. Give you advice, give you their best tips and strategies and techniques for mastering life and becoming the best man you can be. And there's thousands of incredible, regular, awesome dudes like yourself in this group as well who share advice, who share information, who inspire each other and take each other to the next level of becoming the best version of themselves. So join the group right now if you haven't already. I feel like I talk about this all the time, but I love this group. It's so inspiring. It's incredible. You have to be a part of it if you're not a part of it yet. Just ask any one of the thousands of guys who are in this group. We absolutely love it. We talk about it every day. We're involved every day. It's incredible, and I want you to be a part of it too. So go to EliteManMastermind.com. It's going to forward you right to Facebook, or just go to Facebook and type in Elite Man Mastermind. You can join the group that way as well. Either way, I'll see you on the inside, guys. So keep kicking ass and taking names. Welcome, guys. It's Justin here, and my guest today is none other than Ty Bollinger from The Truth About Cancer. Ty, thanks so much for coming on the show, man.
Yeah, Justin, I appreciate you having me on, brother. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, absolutely, man. This is obviously a big topic that I like to talk about. You know, I cover things like Alzheimer's, cancer, Parkinson's. I had a guy by the name of Dr. Harch on the show before covering hyperbaric oxygen therapy, which is great for different things like cancer and stuff. So I'm really excited to bring you on, man. I know you're doing incredible work in finding out all sorts of cancer treatments, ways of preventing it, right down the line of just, you know, groundbreaking research and stuff you're doing. So I'm excited to have you on, man. Just quickly, I know you kind of get this question a lot, but, and I don't want to dive too much into it, but just give us a quick little background on how you got into this. I know it had something to do with losing your father, unfortunately, to this, and I think other family members, is that right, to cancer at some point?
Yeah, man, it's really turned into kind of a personal mission of mine over the last 20 years to learn all I could about cancer and educate people about it, because I did lose my father in 1996, actually 20 years ago. Awesome. He was diagnosed with cancer. Yeah, I appreciate it. So, you know, time helps to kind of heal the wounds a little bit, but, you know, there's not a day goes by that I don't miss him. But he was diagnosed, you know, at the time that Dad was diagnosed, July the 1st of 1996, he was 52 years old. And the odd thing about it is, man, I'm 48 now. I'm almost 49. So he's barely older than I am at this point, and he's diagnosed with cancer. He didn't have any physical symptoms at all at that point other than a stomach ache. So they go in. They think it's gallstones. They open him up, and it turns out it's cancerous tumors. They take out about 75% of his stomach, and he died in 3 weeks. He died from the surgery. He didn't really die from the cancer, even though he was diagnosed with cancer. The initial prognosis was that he'd have about 2 years to live if he didn't do chemo, and he died in 3 weeks. So they, you know, they botched the surgery and he died from it. I'm not blaming the doctor by any means. That's just what they're taught. You know, you have a cancerous tumors throughout the stomach. You cut the stomach out. Now I started looking at that thinking, man, that just doesn't make sense. I mean, we have our stomach for a reason. You know, why do we cut it out if it has tumors? Why don't we try to heal it? Mm-hmm. So that's really what kind of took me down the rabbit hole of doing research on natural treatments for cancer, you know, putting the body into a state where it can do the healing. You know, that makes a lot of sense to me. It made a lot of sense to me then, makes even more sense to me now. And after Dad died, you know, over the next 7 or 8 years, I lost both granddads, grandmother, uncle, cousin, and finally my mom to cancer. Or, you know, some of them died actually from the treatments. They didn't die from the cancer, much like my father did. But that's what got me into it, man. Before that, I was I'm a CPA. I have a master's degree in taxation from Baylor University. I was a competitive bodybuilder for about 7 years in the state of Texas. Did pretty well in competitive bodybuilding. And just never realized that, you know, when I was going through college that 20 plus years later, I'd be doing research on cancer. But that's where I am now. It's my passion because I want people to know that they have options, when they're diagnosed with cancer and that they don't have to undergo the knife or chemo or radiation. They do have options.
Yeah, man, I appreciate you sharing that. And yeah, I think it's so important too for, you know, people to know that there is other options out there. And I think you mentioned it. I have literally your book right in front of me, the book you came out with a couple weeks ago, The Truth About Cancer, which, you know, I'm diving through it. It's an incredible book, man.
Thanks, man.
But yeah, I think you mentioned that 1 in 3 or even 1 in 2, upwards of some studies say 1 in 2 people will get cancer at some point in their life. And this number's jumped up dramatically in like the past 100 years. I mean, you mentioned a number of family members that have had this, unfortunately. Me personally, I haven't had any direct family, like immediate family that's had this, but I've had cousins and friends, and, you know, a good friend of mine's her mother just got cancer for the second time, lymphoma, I believe it is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just a sad, sad thing, man. But why is it? Can you talk about why you think it is the number of cases of cancer has gone up, even though, you know, our health standards and our way of living has gone up over the years? Why is the mm-hmm. cancer rate just shot through the roof?
Yeah, I got some good theories on that. And by the way, thanks for the kudos on the book. But, you know, why are we getting sick with cancer? Why is that statistic in the book? You know, that's not a made up statistic. I didn't like go, well, you know, it seems like about 1 in 2, 1 in 3. That's according to the World Health Organization, man. That is according to the American Cancer Society. 1 in 2 men alive today, 1 in 3 women will face cancer. So why is the rate of cancer diagnosis skyrocketed over the last 100 years? It's not just because we have better detection methods. We do have better detection methods. I'm not going to question that. But you don't have a rate of cancer going from 1 in 80 to 1 in 2 or 1 in 3 in 100 years without something drastic happening. And I think a lot of it is the fact that we have had this industrial revolution. We have this increased standard of living, as you mentioned, and we've basically destroyed our food supply with this standard of living. We've learned how to process it, package it, can it, ship it, make it have a shelf life of 1 billion years, never rots. And as a result, our bodies, we're eating food that's not nutritious and it's not nourishing to our bodies. I think that's the main thing that's happened over the last 100 years is our diets have changed. Now, if you want to eat an anti-cancer diet, in my opinion, look back to what your grandparents were eating. What did grandma and granddad eat? Well, they grew their own vegetables because you couldn't buy them at a store. You had to grow your own. They raised their own livestock. You know, they milked their own cows, made their own cheese, grew their own fruit, grew their own grains, made their own bread. Everything was homemade. And now it's rare. I mean, how many people do you know that make all their own meals versus buying something packaged or in a fast food restaurant? I mean, almost nobody does that anymore. Mm-hmm. And I think that has directly affected the rates of cancer is the fact that the food that we're eating is processed. It's not real food like we used to eat, and that has given rise to increased rates of cancer. Now, that's not the only reason. That's one of many. I think that the pollution that's in the air now, I mean, if 100 years ago there was no planes flying overhead that were spewing exhaust and chemicals on us that we were breathing, there wasn't the factories that we have today. They didn't have electricity in a large part 100 years ago, and so now we have this what they're calling dirty electricity, which is electromagnetic frequencies, whether they come from cell phone towers, you know, radiation in other forms, or just electric appliances in your house giving off frequencies that are harmful to your body's functioning. Man, the list goes on and on, Justin, but the reality is I think over the last 100 years, because of this increase in our standard of living, we've inadvertently made popular a lot of gadgets, foods, drinks, and other things that go hand in hand with our daily comfortable lifestyle that are causing our bodies to be sickened, our immune systems to be suppressed, and eventually give rise to cancer.
Yeah, I agree, man. And Hippocrates himself said it best. And, you know, you talk about him a bit in the first part of the book. Let food be thy medicine and medicine be thy food. And I think it's, you know, very applicable in this situation where we're eating such terrible foods, like processed. They have so many toxins in them. What are some of the things you recommend people? I know you mentioned, you know, having that sort of grandparent diet, which would be fantastic. If a lot of us could do it. But what are some of the things we could, like, are more, I guess, applicable or stuff that we can do when you recommend that we eat? Like, what are some things to look on, like, the back of labels for in the grocery store? What are some of the aisles to stay away from?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think the main aisles to stay away from generally are the middle aisles, because the middle aisles are the aisles that are not refrigerated, right? The outer aisles typically have the refrigerated units and the freezers. Those are the aisles that you want to shop at. You also want to shop in the fresh aisles. So, I'm not necessarily buy a bunch of packaged frozen food. I'm just saying that a lot of times if you have vegetables that have been frozen, they're going to be a lot less toxic for you than a package of something that has, that's been ziplocked and, is in a box or a can in the middle. So you shop for the fresh stuff, shop for the frozen stuff, shop for the refrigerated stuff, which is stuff that spoils. And if you have a food that doesn't spoil, then it's probably going to spoil you, because you're not going to be able to digest it well, and it's going to cause digestive problems, bowel problems. It may cause fissures in the intestinal lining. It can cause leaky gut. The list is endless. So I really think that the main thing is let's shop on the outer aisles, try to get as much fresh as possible. But not, you can't just buy fresh nowadays, because we have now what's called genetically modified organisms, or GMOs. And the reality is that much of the corn, much of the soy, the canola, the cottonseed, most papaya now, and there's several other fruits and vegetables that have been genetically modified. So you can't just shop fresh. You need to look at the label and try to buy as organic as possible, because if it's organic, it's not genetically modified. If you have kids, I have kids, and I mean, I'm not like a food Nazi or something where my kids don't ever get anything tasty. But if we do buy packaged foods like, you know, chips or crackers or whatever, I make sure that it's 100% certified organic by the USDA and non-genetically modified. So, and there's a wide selection of goods that are packaged now that are non-genetically modified, that are organic, that you can buy if you have kids that want something like that. But generally, I recommend that people shop on the outer aisles, buy as much fresh organic produce as you can, and just picture what your grand folks would have eaten and eat that way. And that, which means I'm not opposed to eating clean meats and, you know, animal products. A lot of people that are, if they're vegan, they don't do any of that. I'm not opposed to that. I think you can get really high quality as long as it's from an organic source. And if it's beef, it needs to be cows that are grass fed and grass finished, because cows need to eat grass to produce meat that's healthy for us. When they're fed grains, not only do they produce meat that's not healthy because of the omega-3 to omega-6 ratio, but most of the grains they're being fed are genetically modified. So not only are we what we eat, but the cows are what they ate. So if they've been fed genetically modified grains, then they are going to be genetically modified meat. So, you know, it's just, it really takes awareness up to another level with all of these toxins that are in the food supply. You really have to be vigilant. You have to be knowledgeable. You have to educate yourself, and you just can't go out and buy anything anymore at the supermarket.
So does it, I guess all your food that you get, Ty, for the most part, is it organic? Do you ever eat anything? Like, what are some foods that you say, you know, 100% no, I'm not going to touch that. Stay away from it.
Yeah. So if it's, We do a lot of fresh produce here, and so, and a lot of fresh fruit. My daughter Brianna, she's 16. She loves fresh fruit. But if it's not organic grapes, if it's not organic strawberries, those are the two of the main ones that we will not buy. If it's not organic, we just don't get it, because those have both been heavily sprayed. On the flip side of the coin, if it's like an avocado that's non-organic, it's a conventional avocado, I'll still buy that, because they're not sprayed as heavily. Plus, they've got a shell. Mm-hmm. You don't, and so you don't eat the shell. You don't eat the thick skin. You scrape the meat out of the avocado and you eat that. A lot less toxic than eating something like an apple or apples are other ones that are sprayed heavily. Apples or grapes or blueberries or strawberries that have been sprayed heavily, and that those pesticides seep in through the skin. So even if you wash it off at the time you purchase it, most of the pesticides have already absorbed into the meat, the pulp of the fruit. So you're getting a really heavy dose of pesticides if you buy those that are not organic. But on the flip side of the coin, you know, the avocados are okay, I think, if you buy them conventional, if you can't get organic. If we can't get organic bananas, we'll buy a conventional banana and we peel the skin, which is where most of the pesticides would be if they're sprayed. So, you know, there's certain ones that you definitely never want to touch if they're not organic, and there's some that you can get away with. I try to eat mostly organic if possible. If it's not organic, we'll do the best we can and we'll rinse the food the best we can and take it from there.
Okay, man, cool. Switching gears a little bit, I want to give people sort of a background of why the government has sort of suppressed a lot of natural treatments. I want to get into some of these natural treatments in a bit, but before we get to that point, I want to kind of give people an understanding of how this works. And, you know, it's not just like some conspiracy theory, you know, wacko stuff where it's like, oh, the government's trying to hide cancer. There's actually, you know, proven research and documents out there that back sort of the efficacy of what you're saying as far as, you know, the truth about cancer, why it's a business, why Big Pharma has sort of taken over. Can you just quickly talk about why that is and sort of how that started?
Yeah, well, you know, I point back to 1910 and the Flexner Report of 1910, and I talk about this in the Truth About Cancer book. And so the Flexner Report was an effort by the Rockefellers and the Carnegies, who teamed up with the American Medical Association in an effort to evaluate which medical schools in the United States were teaching sound medicine. Now, upon face value, that sounds like a really noble cause. We want to figure out who's teaching sound medicine so we can, you know, continue to produce, you know, high quality doctors and continue to save lives. Sounded good, and a lot of things that came out of the Flexner Report maybe weren't all that bad, but the primary thing that came from the Flexner Report is that once they evaluated these medical schools, and Rockefeller put one of the men that was on his board of directors named Abraham Flexner, his brother Simon actually was on the board of directors, but Abraham traveled the country with the head of the American Medical Association, and they evaluated over 300 medical schools at that time. The preordained conclusion, Justin, was that the medical schools that were heavily drug intensive in their curriculum were the ones that received the highest marks. They were the ones that were deemed to be teaching sound medicine. Because, see, Rockefeller and Carnegie wanted to monopolize the chemical industry, which later became pharmaceutical industry, the drug companies. And so the medical schools at that time that were teaching homeopathy or herbalism or chiropractic or any of these things that today we might even consider to be quackery, and I'll get to why we consider those to be quack today, those medical schools didn't receive high marks, and so they didn't receive any funding from the Rockefellers and the Carnegies to continue. So as a result of the Flexner Report, which was eventually presented to the Carnegie Institute and then eventually to Congress, and it became the kind of like gatekeeping document that was what the American Medical School or the American Medical Association used as their blueprints for what a medical school should look like in the future. And future medical schools had to adhere to these strict standards of basically pushing drugs as their primary method of treatment. All the other medical schools fell by the wayside that were teaching these natural methods. So by default, 100 years later, 106 years later, to be accurate, it's 2016, this was 1910, 99% of the medical schools in the United States, their number one curriculum, their number one focus of their curriculum is to push drugs. And it's because of this conglomeration of this business interest between Rockefeller, Carnegie, and the American Medical Association in 1910 that this has happened. So by default, if a doctor has a medical degree, if he's a medical doctor or she's a medical doctor, they have graduated from a Flexner-approved medical school that teaches heavily drug-intensive protocols and teaches nothing about nutrition, teaches nothing about detoxification, teaches nothing about herbalism or homeopathy or chiropractic or any of these things that were thought to be valid medical treatments 106 years ago. Now they're looked at as quackery, because the medical school curriculum was co-opted by big business in 1910. And in 1913, the American Medical Association actually developed an internal department, which they called the Propaganda Department. And the sole purpose of this department within the AMA was to attack any doctor that was using what they called quackery, which would have been herbs or nutrition or supplements or chiropractic or homeopathy. Anything like that was deemed to be quackery, and they were attacked viciously by the American Medical Association. This was the first time that the term quack was ever used in the United States, was by the AMA in an effort to discredit doctors that were using natural methods.
Yeah.
So
that's incredible.
Yeah. So as a result, 106 years later, all the medical schools teach is drugs, and all the doctors learn when they go through medical school is drugs. So by default, the only thing that they think is a valid treatment for any disease is drugs, because that's all they've been taught because the curriculum was co-opted 100 years ago. You know, it's like if we grew up in a situation – just put yourself like this, Justin. We grow up – let's say we don't have space travel. We don't have telescopes. We don't have anything like that. And we were taught from day one that the Earth is flat, which they taught for hundreds of years. We were taught the Earth was flat. And then somebody comes along and says, no, you know what? Earth's not flat. Earth's round. What would we do? We'd call them a conspiracy theorist, right?
Yeah.
But the reality is that happened hundreds of years ago, and now we know they were right. And the ignorant ones were the ones that thought the Earth was flat. You know, and so these doctors are not by any means stupid people. Doctors are very, very smart to get through medical school, but they only know what they're taught. And even a genius can't teach you something that they know nothing about. And these doctors are not taught about any nutritional regimens when they go through medical school. They're not taught about the other side of the coin that can help your body to be healthy. The only thing they're taught is drugs treat disease, drugs treat disease, drugs treat disease. So to them, that's gospel truth. And that's why your doctor doesn't even know these things, because they're not taught in medical school.
Yeah, I mean, that's a sad sad realization of kind of how it works. And it's, you know, it's sad that the medical industry was corrupted by you know, people like Rockefeller, Carnegie's, the big sort of money makers back then, and just carry on until now.
And here's something real quick, Justin, it just shows the hypocrisy, which we see a lot of hypocrisy in today's politics. We won't get into that. But we saw hypocrisy 100 years ago with this, because John D. Rockefeller, he was instrumental in getting homeopaths labeled as quacks in the United States. But he had his own personal homeopath for his family until the day he died.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it really is.
Wow. Yeah, you're right, man. I mean, that just speaks volumes of, you know, how ridiculous it is. How effective are the cancer treatments that we have now? You know, the chemo, the radiation, things like that. Is it effective? Is it safe? And is it effective at all?
You know, the chemotherapy works on a select few types of cancers, you know, like a testicular cancer, some prostate cancers, the lymphomas, chemotherapy can work pretty well on. But I think the real question that we should ask is what gave rise to the cancer? And so I think that's where Western medicine falls short. And that's why treatments like chemo and radiation don't work that well for most cancers in long term. They have a very abysmal success rate. And the reason is that they're not asking the right question. The question should be, why is this cancer in my body? What gave rise to it? Well, I guarantee you one thing. You don't have, Hodgkin's lymphoma because you're deficient in chemotherapy. You have Hodgkin's lymphoma because something else is going wrong in your body. Something has been compromised in your immune system, with your blood supply, whatever it might be. But it's not because you're deficient in chemotherapy. So you might use chemotherapy as a band-aid to shrink the tumor burden in certain cancers, or to get rid of some of the cancer cells in your blood with certain cancers. But in the end, the only thing that's going to heal cancer long-term is providing your body with nutrition that it needs, detoxifying your body in a way so that it can do the healing. Because in the end, the body's what does the healing. And there's a lot of people that would say, well, you know, I've got a friend, I've got a family member, I've got a mom, dad that did chemo, and he's alive or she's alive. And I'm like, that's awesome. I'm glad they're alive. But let me tell you something. It wasn't the chemo that healed them. The chemo may have killed the cancer burden or the tumor burden and given their body a chance to fight back. But in the end, it's their body that healed them. And so there are certain cancers, like I was saying, that chemo works pretty well with, but most it doesn't. Radiation I mean, every oncologist knows that radiation causes cancer. That's why when they give you a radiation treatment, or even they just give you an x-ray, what do? They hang out right there next to you? Or no, they step out of the room, right? Because it causes cancer. We know that it causes cancer. So you're not going to ever have, in my opinion, a long-term solution to the cancer epidemic by injecting toxic poisons and chemicals in the form of chemotherapy into bodies and exposing bodies to radiation, which is a known carcinogen. It might be a band-aid temporarily, but in the end, the only thing that heals is the body. And that's why it's so important to get into nutritional herbs, to get into oxygen therapy or light therapy or nutritional therapy or whatever it might be. Because in essence, what the goal should be is to provide the body with the nutrition, with the fuel that it needs so that it can turn that healing mechanism back on. Because we all have what Dr. Ed Group calls a self-healing mechanism. But unfortunately, because of our diets, because of lack of exercise, because of toxicities we're exposed to that we're breathing in, even invisible toxicities that are in the form of electromagnetic radiation, so forth, that self-healing mechanism gets turned off or it gets overburdened to such an extent that it's not working properly. So I think the goal should be to unburden the body from the toxicities and begin to nourish the body so that that self-healing mechanism can be turned back on. And in the end, if anybody has a long-term solution to cancer, and they're alive 10, 20, 30 years from diagnosis, I guarantee you, it's not because of chemo or radiation or any other treatment. It's because they began to nourish the body and they unburdened the body and the body's what healed them.
Ty, what would you do if your family member, a close family member, you know, wife, children, brother, anyone like that was diagnosed with cancer like today or tomorrow? What would you do for them?
The first thing I would do is I would sit down with them and find out exactly what their daily regimen looks like. What are they, do they exercise? Do they sweat? What are they eating? What are they drinking? Those are the main things. And I'd also look at, what kind of exposure do you have to your electronic devices? Cause that's an invisible killer right now. The cell phones, cell phone towers, the iPods, the iPads, whatever the device name might be. These are all emitting radiation, and you know that's one of the reasons we're seeing a lot of children being diagnosed with cancer is they're sleeping with these devices, they're sleeping with their lights on, they're sleeping close to, you know, their house may be right, you know, down the street from a cell tower. These are invisible, but just because they're invisible, you know, electricity and radiation are invisible to the naked eye doesn't mean that they're not toxic. So what I'd do is I'd really go through just an average everyday. You know, what do you do? What is your protocol each day? And I try to clean it up. Reality is most people should probably start with drastically cleaning up their diet. As basic as that sounds, you know, there's a big difference between wisdom and knowledge. We all know that eating in a fast food restaurant three times a day is not healthy. But unless you apply that knowledge and become wise with your daily choices and you start buying organic food and cooking your own meals and staying away from those places, then that knowledge doesn't really do us a lot of good. And so I encourage people to become educated on these things, but also then to become wise in their choices and apply that knowledge once they've been educated, because it doesn't do any good just in your head. You got to work through it on a day-to-day basis. So I think that probably 90 plus percent of people that have been diagnosed, the first thing they should do is look at their diet. As a matter of fact, some people have been cured, and I use that term in quotation marks, so I don't really believe that there are that cancer is something that's cured. Cancer is something that you live with in perpetual remission for the rest of your life. Even people that have not been diagnosed, we all have cancer. Cancer cells are throughout every one of our bodies. So it's not really a cure. It's just controlling it and living a healthy life. But there are people that have lived long, healthy lives after diagnosis of terminal cancer, and all they did is change their diet. It comes to mind a good friend of mine, Chris Wark. He lives in Memphis, and he was 26 years old. 10 years ago, he was 26, diagnosed with what they told him would be terminal stomach cancer. And he didn't think chemo made sense to him. He didn't think the diet that they recommended to him after diagnosis made sense to him. And he just, it just didn't resonate with him. And he changed his diet. That's all he did. Changed his diet, started eating big organic salads and started juicing. 6 months after diagnosis, he was told that they couldn't find the cancer. And, you know, 10 years later, he's cancer-free still and speaking. I just had him speak at our conference in Dallas about 3 weeks ago, and as healthy as could be. And that's all he did. So I think that's a primary starting point for almost everyone, is to clean up your diet. And then you can go from there depending upon the kind of cancer it is. If it's a brain cancer, a lot of times we're seeing brain cancers on the side of the head where people hold their cell phone. So first thing I do is stop holding the cell phone on that side of your head. And a lot of times we're seeing tumor shrinkage almost immediately from the time people quit using their cell phones. But it'd have to be an individualized approach. I know that's just kind of a general sweep there.
Hey man, I got a couple quick reminders I want to share with you. First, the Elite Man podcast is available on all podcasting channels, including iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, Google Play, and directly on the EliteManMagazine.com website. You can subscribe to any or all of these channels to get every episode as soon as they're available, and I highly recommend you do so. Also, our show notes are always up on the EliteManMagazine.com website for you to check out more info on every podcast we have. This includes the summary of each episode, any links for products, recommendations, or resources we mention, and further info on that episode. And finally, if you're not on our Elite Man newsletter yet, join today at EliteManMagazine.com/newsletter. You'll get all of our podcast episodes, articles, videos, and special content not seen or heard on the site or show. Join the newsletter now, EliteManMagazine.com/newsletter.
What are some of the other things you've – I mean, you've interviewed hundreds of some of the best doctors in the world. What are some of the sort of groundbreaking work that these guys are doing that most people don't know about?
Yeah, you know, I traveled last summer to Riga, Latvia, and that was a fascinating trip. We got there to Riga, and if people are not familiar with where Latvia is, it is just west of Russia, and it's on the Baltic Sea. It's across the Baltic Sea from Sweden. It's a little country that most people have never heard of. But we traveled to Riga, and, you know, my impression, Justin, when we went down there was, you know, that we're going to a third world country here. This is like Soviet bloc nation. I'm hoping we don't get thrown into a concentration camp. That was my naive opinion as an American going there. So we fly into Riga, and it is the most beautiful city that I've been to.
Wow.
A pristine downtown area, about 1 million people there. Friendly people like you've never seen. Everybody's out walking. There's parks throughout downtown. People are walking. The kids are riding their bikes. It's just – it looked like a fairy tale. And the food there – one of the things I noticed over a few days there in Riga was that there was not any obese people that I saw in Riga. And in a city of 1 million people, that's something.
Wow.
No obesity. Actually, that's kind of not true. I did see four people that were probably obese or borderline obese, and I was able to either speak to or overhear all of them talking, and none of them were Latvian. They were two of them were Americans, and two of them were from UK.
Oh man!
So there were no Latvians there that I saw that were obese. And the reality is that all of the food there is farm to table. They ship it in that day from farms that are within 10 miles of the city. They cook it fresh. They don't eat packaged foods. They don't allow genetically modified organisms in their country, and everybody's healthy and happy. It's just unbelievable. But one of the treatments that I learned about there in the European Virotherapy Center is a treatment called Rigvir. And I talk about this in the book. If you've read the book, you're familiar with this story. Mm-hmm. But Rigvir stands for Riga virus. Rigvir is a healthy virus that is found in the intestines of children. It was discovered about 30 years ago by a professor named Aina Mucinica in Latvia, and her grandson now runs the European Virotherapy Center. And I was able to interview several medical doctors there in Latvia. And this virus is really amazing. Now, if you're like me, you hear virus and you're like, oh, we don't want to deal with viruses. They're bad. Well, you know, it's the same thing with bacteria. We're all accustomed to thinking, well, we don't expose yourself to bacteria. Bacteria are bad. But the reality is that in your gut, we have 100 trillion organisms in our gut, most of them bacteria, and about 2/3 of them are good bacteria. They're not bad. So, and the same goes with viruses. You can have good viruses and bad viruses. Well, they found a good one. They found a virus that is selectively toxic to cancer cells, and they began to experiment with it. This is a non-genetically modified, completely natural, selectively toxic virus that kills cancer cells. It's been approved now by Latvia, Georgia, and Armenia to be used in the oncological wards there. So mainstream medicine in those three countries is now using Rigvir as a treatment for cancer. It's covered completely by the insurance over there. If you're a Latvian citizen and you're diagnosed with cancer, the government pays 100% of your costs. And it's very effective. I interviewed a lady there. Her name is Zoya. She was diagnosed with stage 4 cancer in St. Petersburg, Russia. She was put on chemotherapy on several rounds until a point where they said, just take her home. She's almost dead. They sent her to the equivalent of Russian hospice, and she was given 2 weeks to live. Her family loaded her in the car, drove to Riga, Latvia, got her on Rigvir treatment. They tested her blood, by the way, Justin, when she arrived in Riga. And the pathologist sent the blood back and said, you need to get another specimen. You took this from a dead person. We need a specimen from a live person. And they said, no, that's her blood. And the pathologist said, there's no way she's alive. Her blood's in such bad shape. I can't believe this lady's still living. But that was 5 years ago. I interviewed her last year. She's completely healthy. She's gone back to Russia to try to share this with the patients that she was in the hospital with in Russia. Unfortunately, they've all died. They were all on chemotherapy. She's the only one living. She tried to share this with her oncologist in Russia, and he told her that the reason that she was alive was because of a delayed reaction from the chemotherapy that he gave her. So,
wow.
Yeah. But anyway, that was one of the many treatments that I learned about last year. But the Rigvir treatment is very, very effective, especially at melanoma. But beware of wolves in sheep's clothing. The FDA has recently approved a viral therapy drug here. I think that the manufacturer probably got the idea from Rigvir. The only problem is that this product is called Imlygic, is genetically modified. It's a genetically modified virus, and it's not selectively toxic to cancer cells. So you're going to have side effects when taking it too. So that's something to be aware of. But I think that was maybe the most fascinating treatment that I learned about on my travels last year. I also traveled down to Mexico and visited the Hope for Cancer Center, Dr. Tony Jimenez, and got a chance to examine and observe firsthand his sonophotodynamic therapy, which is using sound and light and electricity to heal cancer. And that was fascinating. It was fascinating to see these machines, because cancer cells respond differently to normal cells when exposed to sound. They respond differently than normal cells when exposed to certain spectrums of light, and they respond differently than normal cells when they're exposed to electricities and frequencies specifically. And so these methods can all be used to create what we call selective toxicity to cancer cells without harming the healthy cells. And that's what's really missing, Justin, with the conventional treatments for cancer. Chemotherapy definitely will shrink a tumor, but it also kills healthy cells. And that's why a lot of people are like, man, if I can just live through this chemo, I might get better. Well, because the chemo's killing you while it's killing the cancer. And that's what really distinguishes some of these effective natural treatments for cancer, is that they don't almost kill you while they're killing the cancer. People are living really high quality lives while they're going through treatment. They don't feel like they're on death's door. They're not puking their guts up and losing their hair. And they're having joy going through the treatment. That was one of the things that I realized when visiting Dr. Tony's clinic down there at Hope for Cancer in Tijuana. I was able to meet with a group of about 12 or 13 of his cancer patients all at once, and we all got together and just kind of discussed the treatment in a big room, and every one of them was happy, laughing, and just looked like they were just living each day to the fullest. And I was able to contrast that with what I've seen in traditional cancer wards, where it's really not a happy atmosphere. It just has a feeling of death. And as one of the things I learned, Justin, last year, is that your mental state has a heck of a lot to do with whether you recover or not. And so they are facilitating recovery, not only with their non-toxic treatments and their treatments that just go after the cancer cells, but with the happiness, the joy, the camaraderie that's created with these patients together. They're also facilitating healing with the emotional aspect, I think, to cancer, which is oftentimes overlooked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you talk quite regularly about that too, like the placebo effect and also the nocebo effect, where someone, yeah, you know, a doctor tells you you have 3 months to live, and he's basically sentencing you to death, because your mind is literally going to take that as, you know, that's it. Like, he's, you know, this guy professional is telling me, you know, I only have 3 months to live, and then your body kind of takes over, your mind takes over and sort of shuts down, because, you know, he's telling you that's all you got. So why would you not believe him?
Yeah, absolutely. The nocebo effect is real. One of the physicians that I interviewed a couple of years ago, Dr. Rashid Buttar, shared with me a story of his. He had an allegedly terminal cancer patient that was referred to him after going through chemo, radiation, and the works, you know, and they said, we can't help you. And unfortunately, you know, that's a lot of times these natural practitioners get the patients after they've already gone through maximum chemo and radiation, and they're told, there's nothing else we can do. You're dead. Go get your affairs in order. And so they still try to help them, but if the patient dies, then they get blamed, right? It's like, hey, they went to alternative treatments and they died. So Dr. Buttar had a patient that was referred to him. He was told that he had 6 months to live. Dr. Buttar healed his cancer. He still died 6 months from the day that he was diagnosed as having 6 months to live. And Dr. Buttar sent his body for autopsy, and the pathologist called Dr. Buttar back and said, you sent the wrong body. This man doesn't have any cancer. I need you to send the other patient that has cancer. He said, no, that was my cancer patient. And it turns out that all of the cancer had been taken care of. There was not even a sign of cancer in his body, but he still died 6 months to the day from when he was told he would die, and the pathologist couldn't figure out why he died. He could not determine a cause of death.
Wow. That's incredible.
It's the power of the mind.
Ty, so what else aside from, you know, it's great that like all these other countries are doing some amazing things out there. Latvia, you know, Mexico, Germany, I know has some great new research and work they're doing. What mm-hmm. What about an American living in this country? Aside from their diet changes, aside from eating the right foods, what can they do like today or tomorrow if they were diagnosed with cancer? What is like the biggest thing they can do to dramatically improve their likelihood of surviving?
Right. So aside from cleaning up your diet, eat organic, non-GMO foods, make sure you're drinking clean water, get away from the sodas and all the other crap, drink clean, filtered water. You need to make sure on a daily basis you are sweating and exercising. Exercising, especially going up and down like on a rebounder, a trampoline, mini tramp, that moves the lymphatic system. And the lymphatic system is one of our primary detox systems in our body. You have to move the lymph if you're going to be healthy. That's why there's so many lymphomas now, which are cancers of the lymph, because we're not moving anymore. We sit and we click with a computer mouse all day long, and we don't exercise or move. So you have to move. You have to sweat. And that brings us to our other primary detoxification organ in the body. And no, it's not the colon. It's the skin. And so if we're not sweating on a daily basis, we are going to become toxic, and it's going to lead to potentially cancer. That's why every night I sit in a sauna for about 45 minutes and sweat. I also exercise as well, but sometimes you don't sweat as much as you need to if you're exercising, if you're not going, you know, really high intensity. So you got to sweat. Essential oils are something that anybody in the United States can get their hand on. I would recommend that we all start using essential oils. I don't think there's an essential oil out there, whether it's lavender or peppermint or frankincense or rosemary or clove or myrrh, whatever it might be, that don't have anti-cancer properties. What the essential oils are essentially the immune system of the plant and in a concentrated form. So whether you're going to, you know, nebulize it, inhale it, rub it on your skin, some of them people use internally, no matter how you use it, I would try to get into a habit of using essential oils on a daily basis, because they're very, very effective at keeping your immune system strong. And like I said, I don't know of a single essential oil that has not been shown to have some sort of effect on cancer. So sweating, essential oils, diet, and then detoxification is really important. We're all toxic, as I mentioned. And so that's something that, you know, you always want to be under the care of a good natural doctor, but that's something that I think everybody needs to look at least once or twice a year, detoxifying your body, going through the colon, the liver, gallbladder, the kidneys, the blood, and doing a full body detox, because we're all toxic, and it's really a race to see if we can get rid of the toxins quicker than we're taking them in. And if we can keep winning that race, we're going to stay relatively healthy. But if we let it, you know, the toxic burden pile up over time, then eventually we're going to be sick. I mean, to use a crude example, I can do it with you because you're a guy. So let's say you just started using your toilet every day and you never flushed it. Mm-hmm. Well, it wouldn't take more than a couple of days till you're like, man, I don't even want to go in that bathroom. You know? Okay. So just imagine your body's organs, your liver, kidneys, gall, your lungs, all these organs filtering out toxins and pollutants and poisons and chemicals that you're ingesting on a daily basis, but you never do anything to help flush them out. It wouldn't take long before you've just got kind of a toxic sludge in your body, and that's going to lead to sickness. And so I think that it's important for everybody to look at doing detoxification at least a couple times. I try to do it on a daily basis. I try to eat herbs, drink teas, take supplements that help my body to detox on a daily basis. That way you don't have this big Herxheimer reaction where you let all the toxic crap pile up for a year, and then you're like, you do this big detox, and you're like, oh man, I can hardly move. I got a headache, and you know, but I guess in the end it's going to be good for me. Well, you know, that might work, but there's no need for all that. You need to do it on a daily basis and really monitor the toxins that are coming in. Try to keep the toxins going out faster. And at that point, you got a real chance of being healthy.
What are your thoughts on, you mentioned it earlier, oxygen therapy, some of the work, you know, like hyperbaric chambers, some of the work by Ed McCabe about, you know, flooding your body with oxygen. Is that effective for treating cancer?
Yeah, yes. So I've got a chapter in the book. It's called Bio-Oxidative Therapies. And, you know, oxygen is the lifeblood of the cellular system. I mean, the bottom line is that without any oxygen, there wouldn't be us. You'd be dead without oxygen. We also know, based upon work from Dr. Otto Warburg about 80 years ago, and it was in the early 1930s, that cancer cells don't do – most cancer cells, some do, but most cancer cells – don't do all that well in the presence of a highly oxygenated environment. So I think it's important, you know, that's why it's important to exercise, because that gets oxygen in your system. But you can also use machines like a hyperbaric oxygen chamber. Another type of a therapy that actually gets oxygen into the blood is called ozone therapy. It's like activated oxygen. You've got substances like hydrogen peroxide that can help to get oxygen in the body. I think it's extremely important to get on a regimen that allows you to maximize your oxygen intake. And it might be nothing more than practicing deep breathing. You know, how many people do you know that will take 15 minutes out of their day, relax, you know, clear your mind and just breathe as deeply as you can and just relax your body? Well, that helps from a stress perspective, but it also helps from an oxygenation perspective. And as I mentioned, you know, you get a lot of oxygen into the system, the cancer cells don't do as well as normal cells. Normal cells thrive on oxygen. Cancer cells by nature are anaerobic, which means they do well without oxygen. The way that they produce their energy is through fermenting sugar. Normal cells produce their energy through oxygen. Cancer cells don't. Cancer cells produce energy by fermenting sugar. So based upon just that simple fact, it seems like it makes a lot of sense to try to do what you can to provide your body with a highly oxygenated environment. And there's dozens of ways that you can do that. And doesn't it also make sense that you'd want to minimize your sugar intake if cancer cells thrive on sugar?
Yeah, no, absolutely, man.
So then let me ask you a question, Justin, because to me, and maybe this is just me, but does it make sense to you that at most oncological wards, after people go through chemotherapy, they got a big thing of candy at the receptions desk that you can grab some candy on the way out, and then, you know, let's just go ahead and just shoot an IV of sugar into them. You might as well. I mean, you just did something. You're trying to kill the cancer, and then you just give them some candy to feed the cancer as soon as they walk out of your office. That's absurd to me.
Yeah, or they'll tell you, you know, people losing weight, you know, just have a bunch of food, ice cream, and, you know, a bunch of crap to help you gain weight, which is like the worst thing you could do, right?
Exactly. I mean, you've just basically sentenced that cancer patient to death by telling them to eat whatever they want. But they don't know. You know, the problem is that these oncologists, I'm not trying to indict all the oncologists, but they're just not taught this stuff. They're not taught about these basic things while they're in medical school. They're taught somebody has cancer, you give them chemo, you give them radiation, you cut out the organ if you have to. And no, diet doesn't have anything to do with the disease, which is absurd. It's really bizarre, because we know that if you have a Formula One race car and you put Kool-Aid in the tank, it's not going to run very well. That just anybody, you don't even have to be a mechanic to know that. You just know you pour Kool-Aid in that tank, it won't start. But we're told by our medical doctor friends that it does not matter what fuel we put in our body. It'll run the same no matter what fuel. That's absurd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it totally is. Just kind of blows your mind.
Yeah.
Some of the things they'll say. What are your thoughts on B-17 Laetrile? I read somewhere, you know, a while back, there was this guy, and you probably heard of it too. He was using Laetrile, apricot seeds, and I think even apple seeds, if he couldn't get a hold of them. He's taken them for a while, and he actually ended up curing like his tumor for a number of years. And then he started selling these things online. This was years ago. He ended up selling them online, and then the government stepped in and said, no, you can't do that, and actually put him in jail because I think he was like touting it as a cure for cancer. Did you ever hear that, Ty? And what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's actually Jason Vail, who's a friend of mine.
Okay.
I interviewed Jason about that a couple years ago. So what happened is Jason was actually probably my first introduction to natural treatments for cancer. And he did a TV interview back in the mid-1990s with Extra TV show about how he had cured his allegedly terminal cancer by eating apple and apricot seeds. Jason was an arm wrestler from New York State. When he was 18 years old, he was diagnosed with what they said would be terminal cancer. He went through several rounds of chemo that didn't work, just got him sicker. And then he started reading about apricot and apple seeds, which is they contain a substance called Laetrile. And Laetrile is selectively toxic to cancer cells. It doesn't harm normal cells. And if you go out on the internet, you do a search for Laetrile or vitamin B17, or there's different names. You're going to come up with these hit piece articles that say, stay away from apple seeds. They'll kill you. They contain cyanide. Well, yeah, they contain one molecule of cyanide. They also contain a molecule of benzaldehyde, which is also a poison. But they contain two molecules of glucose. But they're completely inert. A molecule of vitamin B17 or Laetrile is completely inert unless the cyanide and the benzaldehyde are released. Just like vitamin B12. Have you ever heard anybody warn you about vitamin B12 being dangerous because of cyanide? You probably haven't. But guess what? It's cyanocobalamin. It's got a molecule of cyanide, but it won't kill you because it's inert, just like vitamin B17. The only place that the molecule of cyanide is unlocked in the body when you eat apple seeds or apricot seeds is at the cancer cell. Cancer cells have an enzyme called beta-glucosidase that unlocks the poison, and then the poisons team up, the benzaldehyde and the cyanide team up, and they destroy the cancer cells. And the rest of the body produces an enzyme called rhodanase, which takes that poison and turns it into a natural painkiller. And so it's actually a healthy thing for the normal cells. It's really an amazing natural treatment for cancer. But Jason started, he healed his cancer. He went out and started selling apple and apricot, or I think it was just apricot seeds on his website. And the FDA and the FTC came in and said, you can't do this. You can't tell people that they're going to cure their cancer. So he didn't really tell people they were going to cure their cancer. He just put up a bunch of testimonials. I think at one time Jason said he had over 1,000 testimonials on his website of people that had healed their cancer by eating apricot seeds. Well, they took him to court in a kangaroo court basically. And in 2002, Jason was sentenced to 5 years federal penitentiary for selling apricot seeds on his website. So welcome to the United States of America, land of the free, home of the brave. You can pretty much go out and do anything you want, except you can't heal cancer naturally or they'll send you to jail for 5 years. So he did 5 years in federal pen for selling apricot seeds on his website.
Wow, that is ridiculous, man. What did he do when he came out of jail or out of prison? Was he still doing this? Or would he just kind of say, you know what, I can't do this anymore.
Yeah, I think Jason's back into it now. He's one of those New York guys. He's like, you can't tell me what to do. So I think he's back at it now. I need to touch base with Jason. I'm glad you brought that up because I haven't spoken to him in probably at least 6 months or so, maybe longer. But as far as I know, he's just doing it kind of underground now. And the reality is that if you don't put up testimonials, if you don't put up claims about a natural substance, then you can sell it in the United States. The problem is if you put up testimonials, if you put up any kind of claims about a natural substance curing anything, the FDA and the FTC will be after you because according to them, the only thing that can cure anything are drugs. And if you have something that you're selling that can cure something, then you're selling drugs over the internet without a license. And you're practicing medicine without a license because God forbid that a natural, you know, seed from an apple could have any kind of therapeutic effect. That must now become a drug because you're selling it that it can cure something. So it's this fine line that supplement manufacturers have to walk. And as long as you're in compliance with all the rules, they'll let you sell stuff. It's just you can't make claims about it curing anything.
That's ridiculous, man. Hopefully
it really is.
Hopefully we can change that, you know, at some point soon and just get someone to just step in and take over what the, you know, FTC and some of these other government agencies have really done. I mean, it is a tragedy. How many lives? Just think of how many lives are being lost because so many people don't know that there's so many other solutions out there.
Oh yeah, yeah. I mean, people are dying every day because they don't have access to this knowledge because the bureaucrats and the alphabet agencies won't let them tell the truth because they want to be able to regulate all these things as drugs and they want to be able to make a cut off of all of them. It's like a legal mafia.
Yeah. Man, just a few more questions. I know your time is probably limited. We've been doing this for a while, and I could probably do this all day, man, because I love this topic.
Yeah.
Do you ever get sort of nervous or a little worried that what you're doing, some of the work you're doing as far as bringing this to the light is going to get you in trouble like it did Jason, or the government's going to step in and say, Ty, you can't do this stuff anymore?
You know, I don't worry about that at all. We're by the book, so I mean, we're not breaking any laws. The thing that I could worry about is somebody going to make me disappear or something. You know, we see a lot of these natural doctors that are committing suicide really in strange, bizarre ways, shooting themselves twice in the head and so forth, over the last 16 months, 16, 18 months. And so I'm not concerned at all about the alphabet agencies because we're not breaking any laws at this point. I'm just exercising my First Amendment freedom of speech to tell the truth. And I don't worry about, you know, any kind of clandestine effort to take me out either. I get a lot of people saying, you gotta watch your back, man, watch your back. You're making the wrong people mad. You gotta watch your back. The reality is that, Justin, I feel like that I'm kind of here on a mission from God, you know, like the Blues Brothers, right? Mission from God. I'm here on a mission to help people to learn the truth, to help the world be a better place, to help people be able to make good decisions about their healthcare. And so, to me, I don't worry about any of that. I just go out and do the best thing that I can each and every day. It reminds me of a quote from, I think it was Thomas Jefferson. He said, "All it takes for evil to win is for good men to say nothing." And so, I'm just not going to be one of those men that says nothing. I'm going to go out and tell the truth. And whatever the consequences are, that's what they are. But I don't give that any thought because the truth is that if we don't stand up and tell the truth, people are continued dying and by the millions.
Hey, God bless you, brother. You know, you're doing some fantastic work, and you know, very brave for you to just stand up and, you know, face some of those critics or even potential backlash from something as powerful as the U.S. government. So keep doing
thanks.
Your thing, man. Absolutely.
Appreciate it. Appreciate it.
Do you have any thoughts on Linus Pauling and some of the work he did with vitamin C therapy, you know, like mega dosing? Is that effective for treating something like cancer, or can it be?
It oftentimes is. Yeah, it oftentimes is. He megadosed with vitamin C. It was intravenous vitamin C. Once you start taking megadoses of vitamin C, if you're taking it orally, it's going to give you diarrhea pretty bad. So you have to take vitamin C intravenously in order to get the doses that Dr. Pauling recommended. He did a lot of testing. He had a lot of patients with cancer. He tested this protocol, and it was extremely successful, upwards of 90%. I think we're looking at a five year period of time, and I can't remember the number of patients that he tested, but it was upwards of 90% of them lived 5 years, and they were all terminal patients using this method. Well, of course, the mainstream medicine wanted to get in and prove him to be wrong, prove him to be a quack, so they went in and they replicated his tests with other cancer patients, and well, the patients died, and they said, well, he's a quack, he's a fraud, didn't work. Well, you know, the problem is when we look back at their testing protocols and the amounts that they used, they weren't using the right amount, they weren't using the right kind of vitamin C, and they were spreading the doses out over incorrect periods of time. So they say that they replicated his experiment and proved him to be a fraud, but the reality is that they didn't. It wasn't the same type of vitamin C, it wasn't the same doses, and it wasn't the same frequency. So how can they say that they replicated his experiment and he was a fraud? The reality is they didn't. I know clinics that across the United States that use high-dose vitamin C intravenously, and they use it very effectively for treating cancer. So that's definitely one of the treatments you can look at in the United States. They just can't say that it's used for cancer. Mm-hmm. That's the thing. You have to find somebody that can do intravenous vitamin C, and a lot of doctors' offices do that. They just can't say anything about the treatment of cancer with the vitamin C. They just say, well, yeah, this will be good for you.
It's almost like living in Nazi Germany, man. You can't, it's like you got to watch what you say and, you know, be secretive about everything. It's crazy.
It really is. You know, it's funny that you say that, because when I was over in Riga, Latvia last year, And we were filming, and I was with one of my good friends, Andrei Repasevsky. He's a Russian that lives in Latvia. He was our tour guide there. He works with the European Virotherapy Center. We were standing by the Freedom Monument in downtown Riga. It's about a 150-foot monument, and it was put there when they freed themselves from the tyranny of Russia. They came out from underneath Russia's control and declared their independence. And we were filming there right at the Freedom Monument, and a police car, a Riga police car, came speeding towards us. And I froze for a second as we were filming, and the police car continued to drive past us, and it was going just driving across the walkway there. That was it. It wasn't going for anybody. It wasn't coming to arrest us. And Andre looked at me, and he said, he started chuckling. He said, "You thought that was for us, didn't you?" I said, "I did. I thought they were going to have a problem with us filming here." And he just laughed. He said, "No, that only happens in the United States. That doesn't happen in Latvia or Russia." So it's kind of backwards of what we perceive. Oh, we have all this freedom here, but he travels the world. He knows every country. He said, Russia and Latvia are so free compared to the United States. It's not even funny.
Wow, that's crazy, man.
But that's not what we hear, is it? We hear that it's tyrannical, communistic countries with the dictators. We would never want to go there. But he said the reality is they have much more freedom than we do.
Man, I wish we had some of that in this country for sure. I heard,
me too.
I heard somewhere that you said cannabis is or can be an incredible healer of cancer. Is this literally like – and I know all the listeners who are weed smokers, it just got like legalized, and where I'm from, Massachusetts, yeah, and a lot of other states, they're probably all jumping for joy. But is this like smoking weed? Is that what you're talking about here? Or is it something else like more medicinal and a different sort of form of it?
Well, no, I'm not talking specifically about smoking weed, although believe it or not, I don't have an issue if somebody wants to smoke. Well, there's a lot of worse things you can do than go out and smoke joint. And by the way, the studies have not shown, they have not shown that smoking marijuana increases your risk of lung cancer. That's not true. It does not. There are enough protective benefits of the cannabinoids in the cannabis. Which really, it's not marijuana, by the way. It's cannabis or it's hemp. It's not marijuana. Marijuana was a slang term that was developed by the DEA in the 1930s to make people afraid of a plant. But anyway, that's another topic altogether. But specifically the type of treatment that I would talk about, and I've addressed this in the Truth About Cancer book, is cannabis oil or hemp oil. So we have different cannabinoids in the plant, and the most well-known cannabinoid in cannabis is THC. That's delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol. That's the one that makes you high if you smoke it. Mm-hmm. But there's other cannabinoids like CBD, cannabidiol. It's a completely non-psychoactive cannabinoid, but it's very medicinal in nature. So I have I've done a lot of research into the effectiveness of cannabis or hemp at treating cancer. And we've got literally dozens and dozens of studies over the last 30 years that have shown that cannabis is effective at treating multiple types of cancer, whether it be pancreatic cancer or breast cancer or prostate cancer, lung cancer, lymphomas, you name it. I think there's up to 12 different types of cancers that I reference in the book that cannabis is effective at treating. The first study that was actually ever done on cannabis or hemp as a treatment for cancer, it was done in 1974 at the behest of the National Institutes of Health and the Drug Enforcement Agency. And they got some scientists at the University of Virginia Medical School to test marijuana, anytime that you have cannabis that's high in THC, that's what they call marijuana, right? Because it's high in the psychoactive cannabinoid that makes you high. Mm-hmm. So they did some tests on this high THC cannabis, and the Drug Enforcement Agency was really giddy. They were hoping that they could find that this evil weed, marijuana, caused cancer. Well, what they found that is actually protective against three kinds of cancer at that point. That was the first study that was done in the United States on it. So the DEA sweeps in. They bury the study. They didn't release it. They didn't want anybody to know that marijuana actually was effective at treating cancer and didn't cause cancer. But over the last 40 years, we've had dozens of other studies all the way from Norway to Japan to Sweden and several medical schools here in the United States, including Harvard in 2007, that show that cannabis is effective at treating cancer. And we're talking about high THC cannabis too. So with the plant that we use the slang term marijuana to describe, that's the one that the most studies have been on, and that they've shown across the board that it's effective at treating cancer.
How do you take that in if you're not smoking? And would you, I guess, get like that psychedelic sort of high if you're taking this in for a medicinal purpose? Like, you know, you want to treat your cancer, are you still going to get high taking that?
Well, it depends on the kind of oil. So you can go and you can find CBD oil all over the internet. Now, most of them aren't all that clean. Some of them have additives, and some of them are using substances that have the same molecular weight as CBD or hemp oil. And so you can't tell that they've actually been cut, kind of like somebody would cut a drug. Then some of these manufacturers are using different substances to cut the hemp oil and make it less effective, but they still make their profit on it. I'd recommend that if somebody wants to get a hold of good CBD oil, you can go to Mike Adams' website, the Health Ranger, naturalnews.com. He's recently come out with what he says is the cleanest CBD oil that he's reselling on his website. But you can get CBD oil in any of the 50 states. You don't have to move to a medical marijuana state or anything like that. Now, if you want to get the oil that is high in THC, then you've got to be in one of those states that has legalized medicinal marijuana or recreational marijuana or both of them, because that's the psychoactive component, and that's what you can't get over the internet.
All right, cool. What are the best supplements to take? Like, what are some of the brands of supplements that are good, and then what are some of just like general everyday supplements that you take or recommend, man?
Well, I wasn't expecting this question, but I've got my own line of supplements. I'm a partial owner in a company called Epigenetic Labs, and so the supplements that I take are all from Epigenetic Labs. I take a bone broth protein. I take a medicinal mushroom supplement called 7M Plus. I take a turmeric supplement called Turmeric 3D. I take a multivitamin each day, which is called Fulvimax. And I take enzymes and probiotics from Epigenetic Labs as well. So I saw kind of a hole in the market a couple of years ago where people were asking for high quality, affordable supplements, and they couldn't find them. They didn't know what to get, and most of the stuff I researched was basically crap. So at that point, I said, I'm just going to get together some formulators that I know can formulate products and tell them the ideas that I have for products and formulate my own. And so that's what we've done.
Cool, man. So, yeah, I mean, yeah, it makes total sense. I guess the standard or like the generic kind of grocery store vitamins, is that any good at all, or is that just kind of crap?
They're crap. And the reason they're crap is that anything that you buy in a grocery store, typically, I mean, I'm speaking in generalizations here. Of course, you might find a grocery store that carries some good stuff. And, you know, some of the grocery stores are, they're carrying Garden of Life products and so forth. That's a good brand. I know Jordan Rubin's a good friend of mine. He's a founder of Garden of Life. Those are high quality supplements. So I'm speaking generically, of course. Most of what you're going to see, anything that you see on a shelf that's like 10 or 15 bucks or less, it's complete crap because you can't manufacture stuff. I mean, I know what it costs to manufacture high quality. All of our products with Epigenetic Labs are fermented. They're organic. They're non-GMO. They're just the highest quality stuff. You can't even, that's not even, it costs more than that to make them. You can't get a product that's not chemical synthetic for that price. So if you're buying something off the shelf, you might as well quit because it's probably a synthetic form of the vitamin instead of a whole food form of the vitamins or minerals. It's not natural, and it's probably the equivalent of taking chemicals. So just because it says, you know, this is high quality vitamin C on it, that don't necessarily believe it.
Gotcha, man. Who are the best doctors? Like a couple, maybe a handful of the best doctors that you would say are you know, doing the best work in cancer. I know you've interviewed hundreds of them. But who are kind of a couple of ones that pop out?
Well, you know, one of the ones that was doing fantastic work, unfortunately, has passed. Dr. Nicholas Gonzalez. He died about a year and a half ago, and his partner, Dr. Linda Isaacs, is still carrying on his work in New York City. He was using the pancreatic enzyme, pancreatic enzymes for treating cancer, the proteolytics, and so Dr. Linda Isaacs is still carrying on his work there. I know that Dr. Tony Jimenez is doing great work at the Hope for Cancer Clinic, which I mentioned earlier. Dr. Lee Aaron Keneally is a physician in Irvine, California at the Center for New Medicine. She's doing great work. Good friend of mine, Dr. Rashid Buttar in North Carolina at the Advanced Center for, I think it's called the Center for Advanced Medicine in Huntersville, North Carolina, is doing great work. Dr. R. Ernest Cohn at the Holistic Medical Center of the Carolinas. I think that's also in close to Charlotte, North Carolina, doing great work. gosh, Dr. Andrew Wishman at the Rejuvenation Center down in near Atlanta, Georgia, is doing awesome work. And that's just there's Dr. Gus Kotsanis in Dallas, Texas, using IPTLD. He's doing some great stuff. We got dozens of doctors across the United States that are really doing good work in the field of cancer. It's just they're just not as well known because a lot of them have tried to stay kind of under the radar because as soon as you start getting known, you start getting attacked.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, man. I think sort of the resounding theme of this interview, though, is that there's so many different cancer treatments and even potentially cures out there, and there's so many options that people don't know about. Would you say that's true?
Oh, yeah. And the main thing is that our goal is really to empower people with knowledge so that they know that they have options. And then at that point, you know, if you face a cancer diagnosis, then you go from there and you're like, okay, I've been diagnosed with cancer. I know that I have these options in addition to what the doctor's going to tell me. And then you can make an educated decision. You know, our whole impetus is to give people the right to choose, right? The right to choose what you want to treat your disease and not have it forced down your throat by a government that says, no, you can't use herbs, you can't use essential oils, you can't use healthy viruses, you will use chemotherapy. That's just antithetical to the whole American perspective. The whole American perspective is, look, we're smart enough to make our own decisions. Give us the information. If we're diagnosed, let us decide. And that's really what we want people to have is just the choice in their own health care.
Love it, man. Just one final thing I wanted to touch on that I kind of forgot to mention earlier. You mentioned hydrogen peroxide. Now, Just for anyone that was listening when you mentioned that, that's not like the over-the-counter hydrogen peroxide we're talking about here, right?
No. Well, like if I'm getting sick, I'm going to go and just get some of the over-the-counter hydrogen peroxide, and I'm going to pour it in my ears. And it's going to bubble up, and what that's effectively doing, it's like just a natural antibacterial in your ears. It's going to kill the viruses, the bacteria that are causing sickness. And I literally, gosh, I don't remember the last time I was really sick. Anytime I start feeling, you know how you get where you're like, I'm feeling a little bit off here. Mm-hmm. Then what I'll do is I'll get just over-the-counter hydrogen peroxide, put it in my ears. Now, if you want to do it internally, if you want to drink water that has hydrogen peroxide or whatever and do it internally, then – and by the way, hydrogen peroxide is a key ingredient in colostrum, right? Mm-hmm, that's found in breast milk. It's part of the immune system's first line of defense against infection. That's what hydrogen peroxide is. That's where we find it in nature is in breast milk. But if you're going to ingest it, you need to get food-grade hydrogen peroxide, and then you got to dilute it down 10 to 1. So typical hydrogen peroxide is 3%. Food grade, I think, is 35%. And so what you want to do is put one part of that with 10 parts of distilled water. And then it's going to be about the same consistency of your typical hydrogen peroxide, but there's none of the preservatives, none of the chemicals. And then you can actually add that to your water and drink it or however if you wanted to ingest it. But be sure that you dilute it before you touch it, because if you actually pour it on your skin, the food grade 35%, it will burn the outer layer of your skin. It'll turn your skin white.
Yeah, in essence, I guess, too, with this, and I've come across this protocol before, too, online. I think the essence of what you're doing, again, here is sort of that ozone therapy, the flooding the body with oxygen, right?
Yeah, sure. I mean, some people do a hydrogen peroxide drip. Some people nebulize it for lung cancer. There's a lot of different ways that you can intake the hydrogen peroxide. But just make sure that if you are going to be using it internally, that it needs to be the food grade that's diluted 10 to 1 with water.
Awesome, man. Hey, yeah. Ty, it's been a fantastic interview, brother. I really appreciate it. Is there any last send-off message you'd like to leave our audience and then a place that our listeners can check out more about you?
Sure, Justin. I mean, my message, and this has been my message and my wife's message for the last 10-plus years, is that no matter what your oncologist tells you, don't believe them if they tell you that you're going to die, because cancer doesn't necessarily have to be a death sentence. There's always hope. And so, you know, with knowledge is power. So I would just really encourage people to educate themselves on these different methods to treat cancer naturally, and just to be prepared if you do get that diagnosis, not to go into a state of fear, but to remember that cancer doesn't need to be a death sentence. There's these treatments really work. There's millions of people alive worldwide that have used them and that are alive to tell their story. And if people want to learn more about me or the mission, is the best website to get me is at www.thetruthaboutcancer.com.
All right, man. I really appreciate it again. Thanks so much for coming on. And guys, definitely check out the site. The guy's doing incredible work. And also his book, which he just came out with, which I've been devouring the last few days, The Truth About Cancer. Ty, thanks again, man. And I'll talk to you soon, brother.
Hey, thanks, Jess. Appreciate it.
All right, guys. I hope you enjoyed that episode. But before you go, there's one last thing I need you to do. I need you to subscribe to this podcast right now if you haven't already. By subscribing to the podcast, you get every single episode the minute they're released. Get all of our Elite Man podcast interviews with all of our incredible world-class guests from the lifestyle, health, fitness, business, and social worlds. Absolutely free. Subscribe now, guys, if you haven't already, and enjoy all future episodes. And yes, if you do love the podcast, leave us an awesome review. We really do appreciate it.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. P-A-I-R.com.